This will be lesson 8 in our study through Genesis. Tonight we'll be getting into the introduction to Abram. We'll be studying him for about a month or so solid on stories dealing with Abram, who eventually will be Abraham. Tonight we'll be doing chapter 11, starting at verse 26, and then we'll be going through chapter 12 and verse 9. First, we'll do a little bit of review. This is what we covered Sunday morning. We talked about the descendants of the sons of Noah. Here's some of the nations that came from Japheth, the Greeks, the Italians, the Spanish, Persians, Gentile nations, those others that you see on there. Talked about the descendants that came through Ham, Ethiopians, Egyptians, Libyans, kind of African countries, and then those that would be in the land of Canaan. Also a little bit of southern Arabia, the early Babylonians and the Philistines, and then those descendants of Shem who will eventually lead us to Abram and then eventually to Christ as well through that line. Here's some of the countries that descended from Shem: the Assyrians, the Elamites, the Chaldeans, Kingdom of Lydia, the Arameans, Arabian tribes, the Israelites, Edomites, Moabites, and Ammonites. And we showed this map a little bit that shows, you may not be able to see their names up there, but that red color is kind of where the nations that came from Japheth settled after the scattering. Shem is the area in yellow, kind of the Arabian areas, or what we would normally think of being the Arabian areas, is kind of where the descendants of Shem settled. And then the descendants of Ham were in green on this map. As we said on that other slide, the countries in Africa and also the land of Canaan and a few other spots you can see in green as well. But all that was after the scattering of the people. So speaking of that, chapter 10 was telling us, Genesis chapter 10 was telling us about those that where the descendants of Noah's sons kind of settled, where they ended up going, and the nations that came from them. Chapter 11 got us into the story of the Tower of Babel, and it tells us why they were scattered. That circle in the middle of that map shows as the Tigris and the Euphrates kind of come together as you're moving southward. Shinar is that plain that we've been talking about, kind of where the story of chapter 11 was told from, a little bit northwest of the Persian Gulf area. That's what's circled in that map. Specifically from the story, some of the main points that came out of there, you had the people saying, "Come, let us build for ourselves a city and a tower whose top is in the heavens. Let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be scattered abroad the face of the earth." We know after what we finished the other day, it's exactly what God did with them. So their plan, as we discussed, came to nothing. But their plan was to build a great city, build a tall tower whose top reaches in the heavens, make a great name or reputation for themselves. They didn't want to scatter. They wanted to stay together and be united and kind of stay in an area and, you know, build that reputation and name up. But that was against God's will. Made the point that man's plans can sometimes be selfish or foolish and without regard to what God's plan for us is. And God takes direct action in this story. After all this happens, God comes down and visits the city. And then he says in verses 7 through 9 of chapter 11, he said, Come, let's go down and confuse their language that they may not understand one another's speech. And then it says he scattered them abroad from there over the face of all the earth, and they ceased building the city. So their plans came to nothing, and God's plan, as we'll get to in a slide in a moment, you know, comes to fruition, exactly what he wanted to happen anyway. But they called the name of that place Babel because the Lord confused their language. So God's plan is achieved and man's selfish ambition was thwarted here. God fulfills his purpose. We brought up the point, recall, from Genesis chapter 9 that we studied where God said, after the flood, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. They couldn't obey that command from the area around Shinar right there. God expected them to do what he said to do. But as we do, as mankind, sometimes we want to do what we want to do. But God puts a stop to it, so their building is stopped, and God's purpose is fulfilled. Then we got into specifically talking a little bit about the generations of Shem. This is the latter parts of chapter 11. And if you see the little blue comment, as these are review slides, except for I had a mistake in my slides from the other day that I realized after I sat down, and I'm bringing it up here. I don't know if anybody noticed that, but we try to use some of these slides in the future. If y'all ever see a mistake or something on here, you know, just let me know and say that's an error you have on there, and I'll try to make a note so that I can fix it when these slides may be used by somebody else in the future. But we talked about this time of the Tower of Babel. This story, it was said, happened in the life of Peleg in 10 and verse 25, and I had down 101 to 239 years after the flood. My error is that it was 101 years after the flood, so I had the first right number, but I should have added Peleg's lifespan to the 101 after the flood, so it should have been from 101 to 340 years after the flood is what was there, because he lived for 239 years. So if you add that to the points that were here, from Arphaxad to Selah to Eber down to Peleg, you add those years together, there's the 101 years after the flood. That's right out of the scriptures. It says it happened in his lifetime. Didn't tell us what year, but you know how long he lived, so you know the range of time that it happened in there. And as I was discussing with Mr. Wheeler after class, he came over and made this point, and I kind of had thought about this myself even before I had the years messed up in here. It means Noah would have still been living before the scattering of the people happened. He would have still been alive no matter where it was in that year, because this 340 after the flood, Noah lived 350 years after the flood. So just not necessarily super important points, but just some points that maybe if you like playing with numbers. And again, the numbers that I have here is not me guessing. These are right out of the scriptures. They're about those years. So kind of tells us about when it happened, but not specifically. A lot of times the story gives generic information because it's not important, maybe what we wonder about sometimes, so it doesn't always give us a specific. Moving on, just some of the descendants after Peleg, Reu, then Serug, then Nahor, who's the grandfather of Abram, and just bringing again that Shem's line is leading us to Abram, who we start studying tonight, and eventually Jesus. And then we talked about, notice how after the flood, how the lifespan of man immediately starts taking a nosedive, and even more specifically, after the time of the scattering of the people that we just studied. You can see that after Peleg right there. We really start dwelling down even a lot more. And by the time we get to Abram, we had men living over 900 years as recorded in early Genesis. But by the time we get to Abram in tonight's lesson, and we'll be studying him for the next several chapters, you know, he lives to be 175. So the lifespan of man has really gone down here by the time after the flood and after the scattering of the people. Similar information that I just gave. And then we get to Nahor, says Nahor begot Terah, that's Abraham's father, and that gets us to where we are tonight, and we'll finish up chapter 11, get into 12. Any comments from last class before we begin the information on Abram tonight? So he's making the point that the Hebrew name came from Eber, who's one of the descendants that we talked about in the lineage of Shem. So getting into Genesis 11:26, it's kind of finishing up a little bit more of information about descendants, so that's where we're going to get to. Wayne wanted to make sure that I brought up this point right here. If you go back to where we started in January and early February, we started talking about the creation story, then we got, and Wayne finished all of those lessons, and then we got into talking about the flood, and then last class, third period, we talked about scattering of the people. Well, now getting into going into chapter 12 and then all the way through Genesis 50. Now we're talking about the period of the patriarchs, our father rule. So that's beginning here with Abram tonight. So this will be our fourth period of all those periods of the Bible that we brought up in the first class. So Terah's descendants. It says, so this is reading from Genesis 11, starting with verse 26. It says, "Now Terah lived 70 years and begot Abram, Nahor, and Haran. This is the genealogy of Terah. Terah begot Abram, Nahor, and Haran. Haran begot Lot. And Haran died before his father Terah in his native land in the Ur of Chaldeans. Then Abram and Nahor took wives. The name of Abram's wife was Sarai, and the name of Nahor's wife, Milcah, the daughter of Haran, the father of Milcah and the father of Iscah." Verse 30, "But Sarah was barren. She had no child." Verse 31, "And Terah took his son Abram and his grandson Lot, the son of Haran, and his daughter-in-law Sarai, his son Abram's wife, and they went out with them from Ur of the Chaldeans to go to the land of Canaan. And they came to Haran and dwelt there. So the days of Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran." So let's discuss a few of these facts here, going over what we just read. Terah starts having children at the age of 70. We just read that in 11:26. Abram is listed first based on his importance to the Israelites in the story that we all know, the story of today, but not because he was the firstborn. And we're going to get more in detail on that as I get into some further slides. But really, here's another example of where the Bible sometimes is very generic, where it says Terah started, or it says Terah had children, and it lists the children and it lists the age when he started having children. That didn't mean that he had triplets when he was age 70, and we'll know by the biblical record kind of why we're saying Abram wasn't the firstborn and couldn't have been born when Terah was 70. And it never really said that here, but if you just read the generic and move on, that's what you would be thinking. That's what I would be thinking as well, but we'll make some more points on that and give some biblical reasons for why Abram wasn't one of them that was born when Terah was 70. We'll make that point in just a few moments, so just bear with me on that. But about Abram, God will change his name to Abraham a little bit later. We'll get to that in a few weeks. Genesis 17:5, he'll be called Abraham, and he's going to have that name changed because he's going to be considered the father of nations. Nahor, that is not the Nahor that begot Terah. It's just as we do in this day. Sometimes a child's named after a father or grandfather. This Nahor, the son of Terah, has the same name as his grandfather, who was Sarug's son. And then Haran dies in the Ur of Chaldeans prior to Terah and Abraham's journey that we're going to get into talking about here. Actually, that was started to be talked about at the end of 11, but then get into more of the story in chapter 12. This one son dies before that journey takes place. So there's three sons there, Abram, Nahor, and Haran. Abram, we'll discuss a little bit later, can't be the firstborn when his father was 70. But we'll get more into that later. But these are the three sons. Goes on to talk about Terah's descendants, Abram and Nahor, taking wives. And it says Abraham took Sarai for his wife. We're told in Genesis chapter 20 a little bit later that this is his half-sister. You see right there, I have the verse written down. "But indeed," he says, "she's truly my sister. She's the daughter of my father, but not the daughter of my mother, and she became my wife." So it was his half-sister, it becomes his wife. It describes her as being barren, but we know from this story very well that God's going to change that, and there's a lesson in there that we're not going to really get into right now, but we need to remember in all these different things that God is in control. You know, we need to have faith that God is going to take care of us. And so her situation has changed later. It becomes a very main story in the biblical record. God changes Sarai's name to Sarah later in chapter 17 as well, in verse 15. And that means princess. And she's going to become the mother of nations. You have the father of nations being Abraham later, and Sarah being called the mother of nations. But in this story, we got Abram and Sarai. And then we got Nahor, who takes Milcah for his wife. Well, that happened to be his niece. You had a lot of that stuff going on back in the early days and stuff, where relatives became spouses, and that's the case here. So Nahor ends up taking the daughter of Haran, again, his niece, which is Milcah, for his wife. So that's the wives of these two characters. And we got this family tree showing you a little bit about Terah's descendants here. You got kind of the dark triangle showing the three sons there, Abram, Nahor, Haran, and then it shows their descendants. It also shows their wives and concubines in the gray shaded ovals right there. So you see Sarah to the left of Abram there. Through Sarah, we're going to get to Isaac. And you also see on the far right of that chart where Lot descended from Haran. Okay, so let's get into this travel. This is still the verses we read at the end of chapter 11 right here. So the travel from Ur to Haran. So it says, it told us that Lot was the son of Haran. So this is Abraham's nephew. We're going to have stories coming up in the next week, specifically about Abram and Lot. Terah took Abram, Sarai, and Lot and left from Ur to go to Canaan, says in verse 31, but they stopped and lived in Haran for a while right there, so much so that it says Terah actually died when he reaches the age of 205 in Haran. So these are all facts from the story as we're ending chapter 11. Getting into chapter 12, then I'll stop and see if anybody has comments, but let's go ahead and just start chapter 12. Titled this, Abram Called to Leave His Country. Chapter 12, verse 1, God tells Abram, get out of your country, from your family, and from your father's house to a land that I will show you. So, knowing what we just read from the end of Genesis chapter 11 and then starting Genesis chapter 12, it may lead one to think that Abram was called out of Haran. However, if we look at the whole picture given in the scriptures, his calling was from Ur, not from Haran. So we got a couple of proofs to go over on this right here. The first one is from Genesis chapter 15 and verse 7. God reminds Abram that he brought him out of Ur. It says in verse 7 of chapter 15, then he said to him, I am the Lord who brought you out of Ur of the Chaldeans to give you this land to inherit it. So his calling, God tells him, he's reminding him, your calling was from Ur. And then proof two, going to the New Testament in Acts chapter 7, verses 2 through 4. There's a lot of good information in this lesson by Stephen, verses 2 through 4. And he said, brethren and fathers, listen, the God of glory appeared to our father Abraham when he was in Mesopotamia, before he dwelt in Haran, and said to him, get out of your country and from your relatives and come out to a land that I will show you. Verse 4, then he came out of the land of the Chaldeans and dwelt in Haran. And from there, when his father was dead, he moved him to this land which you now dwell. We're talking about the land of Canaan. So before we move any further, I just wanted to make sure I got to that right there, because if you just start reading and no research and no more look into the record and you kind of finish chapter 11, you go right into chapter 12, verse 1, there's a lot of things you would say right there. Number one, you'd say, we'll get to this other point later, but you would, number one, probably say, looks like Abram was born when his dad was 70 years old. That's one thing you'd have probably said. Second thing you'd probably said, it looks like he was called out of Haran, or at least maybe you would have thought that. Maybe some people would have thought that. But you look deeper in the biblical record, and God himself says the calling was out of Ur. And then Stephen, when he's talking to the Jews later in his lesson in chapter 7 of Acts, he's very specific. And that's why I kind of highlighted that. It's very specific. Before he dwelt in Haran, God called him and said, do this right here. So I wanted to bring that up. Are there any comments or questions really from the end of chapter 11, talking about the descendants and talking about Terah, talking about maybe Sarah, or Sarai, or Abram in the early days, or all the way through verse 1 of chapter 12. Any comments or questions over that material? Okay, I see no hands. So let's move on. Here's just a map kind of showing where that is going from Ur, going all the way up kind of to the northwest there, and going to Haran right there, or Haran, however you want to pronounce that. And then we'll get to a little bit later. I mean, where is he supposed to go? It's not about staying and living in Haran. It's about getting to the land of Canaan is what he was told to do. That was where his calling's leading to him. But for a while, until his father passes away, as Stephen just taught, that's recorded in Acts chapter 7, they're in Haran for a while there. And then when his father, Terah, passes away, then Abram, Sarai, and Lot move to the land of Canaan. We get to all that story a little bit later, but there's just the map kind of showing what areas he traveled through. All right, let's go a little bit further into chapter 12 and getting to Genesis, go through verse 3 of Genesis chapter 12. So again, repeating what the Lord had said in verse 1, get out from your country, or get out of your country, from your family, from your father's house, to a land that I will show you. God's going to show him which land. He's not there yet. He starts giving him promises. He says, verse 2, I will make you a great nation. He goes on to say, I will bless you and make your name great, and you shall be a blessing. Verse 3, I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse him who curses you. And then one of the most important recording of a verse in our lives to this day right here, and in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. And we'll dive deeper into all these in just a moment. Continue on in verses 4 and 5. So Abram departed as the Lord had spoken to him, and Lot went with him, and Abram was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. There's another fact we have on age here. He's 75 when he departs Haran. Then Abram took Sarai his wife, and Lot his brother's son, and all their possessions that they had gathered, and the people whom they acquired in Haran. And I'm sorry if I keep saying something different every time. You just have to excuse me. And they departed to go to the land of Canaan. So they came to the land of Canaan. And it says in verse 6, Abram passed through the land to the place of Shechem, as far as the terebinth tree of Morah. And the Canaanites were then in the land. And then verse 7, then the Lord appeared to Abram and said, to your descendants I will give this land. I'm talking about Abram here. And there he built an altar to the Lord who had appeared to him. Finishing up the verses, verse 8, and he moved from there to the mountain east of Bethel, and he pitched his tent with Bethel on the west, Ai on the east, and there he built an altar to the Lord, and he called on the name of the Lord. So Abram journeyed going on still toward till the south, to an area that's called the Negev, or Negeb, that we'll be talking about. So he starts heading south past the land of Canaan there from these areas that we just talked about. So let's talk about this. Here's getting to the point that I was making earlier. I called it Notes on Terah and Abram's Timeline. Going back to Genesis 11:26, it states there that Terah began having children when he was 70. But scriptures do not tell which year each was born. It didn't say in 70 this son's born, and when he's 82 this son, or whatever. It didn't really tell. It's just a generic comment. That's when he started having children when he was 70. He didn't have children before there. That's when he started having them. And some other facts. In chapter 11, it tells us that he died at age 205, went in the city of Haran. And then the verses that we read from the lesson of Stephen in Acts 7, there it tells us that Abraham moved to Canaan after his father died. All these are important reference points for us. And then in Genesis chapter 12, verse 4 that we just read, it tells us Abram was 75 when he left Haran. So all that gives us information about age and time and all that now. So therefore, Abram was born to Terah when Terah was 130 years old, not 70. One of the other brothers would have had to have been born when he was 70. And again, so Abram's listed because in the Bible record, who's the father of Israel, considered by all the people, it's Abram or Abraham. So he's kind of listed for reason of importance here, not by age when it lists in chapter 11. And we wouldn't have known that unless we take all the different things that are said, includes what was recorded by Stephen, to know all this right here. Knowing he didn't leave Haran till his father died, knowing that he was 75 at that age, putting all that together. So putting all that together tells you that he would have had to be 130 when he was born, since he's leaving when his dad's 205. That's where all that information comes from. You just do it by looking at those facts and seeing for yourself. So that's how I wanted to kind of give a few facts and build that story of why his age was there. So are there any comments or questions about that before we get a little deeper into the promises given to Abram? Okay, moving on. The three promises, nation, seed, and land. And I'll get to this point too. There were other promises listed there, and we'll talk about them too, that were more individual to Abram himself. But there's three kind of big promises that are more than just Abraham himself. It's to Abraham and his descendants. And then we'll get to those that were to him personally as well and repeat some of those. So let's get to them, starting with the nation promise. In Genesis 12, verse 2, God says, I will make you a great nation. This is why I put this is why, like it's the only reason, but this is one of the main reasons why God separated to do his own plan, what God wanted. He wanted him to be separated from his family and all those different branches and chains of his family in Ur of the Chaldeans. He wanted a distinct nation that came from Abram, that didn't come from all these other peoples. So it wasn't to be a branch. He had to get him away from that so that the line was coming through Abraham specifically, so it was a distinct nation. The Israelites, we're told, would come out of Egypt a great nation later in the book of Genesis, prior to taking the land of Canaan. In Genesis 46 and verses 2 and 3, reading that, God says, then God spoke to Israel in the visions of the night and said, Jacob, Jacob. And he said, here I am. And in verse 3 there, so he said, I am God, the God of your father. Do not fear to go down to Egypt, for I will make of you a great nation there. And we know when we get to that later, and you know just from your memories or teaching and studying this over the past, it is a massive nation that comes out of there that eventually enters the land of promise later. But they're a great nation coming out of Egypt. Then you have the seed promise, which is a spiritual blessing to all families, as we'll recount right here again. Genesis 12 and verse 3. I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse him who curses you. And then the part here for the seed promise, and in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. All the families of the earth shall be blessed. It's not just going to be, as we know now, for Jewish people. This is going to be for all nations. All of them are going to be blessed. And just a reminder, going back to what Wayne taught, you know, I guess a few weeks now, going back all the way back to Genesis chapter 3 and verse 15, when the punishments were be given, this verse was when God was handing down the punishment to the serpent. He says, and I will put enmity between you and the woman, and between your seed and her seed. Her seed. He shall bruise your head, and you shall bruise his heel. The seed, we know the story now. I have another few verses on this later, but we know from studying this now that seed is talking about Jesus Christ. And the seed would come through Abram's descendants. Talking about going back to 12 and verse 3 right there. And in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed through Abraham's descendants. And it would bring salvation to all families, providing a death blow to Satan. So these verses are closely wound together to explain the seed promise. And then Paul gives a little more explanation of this in the book of Galatians in chapter 3 in verse 8. He says, and the scripture, foreseeing that God would justify the Gentiles by faith, preached the gospel to Abraham beforehand, saying, in you all the nations shall be blessed. This is going to be for all mankind. And then going down to verse 16 of Galatians chapter 3. Now to Abraham and his seed were the promises made. He does not say, and to seeds as of many, but as of one. And we know this to this day, and to your seed who is Christ. We know that that seed that's being referenced to, we all know this now, is talking about Christ. But Paul's explaining this when he writes the book of Galatians here. So that's a spiritual blessing to all families coming through Abraham, but tied all the way back to what was said in Genesis chapter 3 and coming to fruition through these lines and descendants that we've been talking about that's leading us to Jesus Christ. And then you got the land promise, Genesis 12, verse 7. Then the Lord appeared to Abram and said, to your descendants I will give this land. What land? The land he was showing them, the land of Canaan. Once he left Haran and gets down there, God's showing him, this land I will give to your descendants. In Joshua 21 and 43, says, so the Lord gave to Israel all the land of which he had sworn to give to their fathers, and they took possession of it and dwelt in it. We know that. Any questions before we go back and talk about some of the personal blessings that were listed there in the first few verses? We talked about nation, the land, and the seed promise. Any comments or questions or something somebody wants to add or something that I may have left out or overlooked? So Rob's just making the point that God, in verse 1, says, brings up the land, and then he is more specific in verse 7 when he actually shows them. Yeah, those two are tied together, verse 1 and 7. Okay, let's talk a little bit about the personal blessings that were listed in the first few verses there for Abraham specifically. Abraham would be blessed materially and spiritually. In verse 2, God says, I will bless you. Not talking about all the families there. He's just saying specifically here to him, I will bless you. And he goes on to say, I will make your name great. All this in verse 2, I will make your name great, Abram. Other men would be blessed or cursed. How about that? God's saying men will be blessed or cursed just based on how they dealt with Abram. It's kind of a big blessing from God right there. How men treated him, God was going to react to those men based on people are not treating you correctly. They're cursing you. I'm going to take care of those people and punish them pretty much. I'm going to take care of how they're treating you. And when people are blessing you the way that they should, and what I have you doing, then those people are going to be blessed. That's a pretty amazing blessings that were thrown on him. So Abraham leaves Haran and arrives in Canaan, as described down in verses 4 through 7. Abraham, Sarai, and Lot leave Haran. Abram is 75 years old. They take all of their possessions that they accumulated there. They take all the people that they acquired, servants and all that they acquired there and built. And we'll know some of that because when they get down very far, they talk about quite a few, right? It's not just like the three people were talked about. We'll end up seeing that there's quite a few others that they had acquired while their time was in Haran. They arrive in Canaan. He stops at Shechem. He receives the land promise there. He's shown with his own eyes this land. Here it is, the land of Canaan that you're in now. This land is the land that I'm giving your descendants. And then just an amazing thing that we see in these last few verses in tonight's lesson. How does Abram react to all this? He builds an altar to the Lord and worships God. You know, he has such respect for God. Then in the last few verses of tonight's lesson 8 and 9, it says after that he travels to the mountains, to the mountain east of Bethel, and then he pitches his tent between Bethel to his west, Ai to the east. He's right kind of in the middle of those two places. And what does he do? He builds an altar there to the Lord, and he calls on the name of the Lord. He worships again. He is constantly seeking God's counsel and wanting God to be with him in all that he does and showing his respect and his love and his honor for God, no matter that he was pulled away from the country that he was pulled to, he constantly shows honor and respect to God. And that ought to be a lesson for us. You know, it's the answer to that lesson for us. Yes, we ought to constantly seeking God's counsel through prayer and making our decisions, learning from the Tower of Babel as well from that story, seeking God's counsel and regarding what God may want us to do in our lives instead of us just jumping out there and doing whatever we want because it seems like it would be good in our own minds, but leaving God out of the picture. You see, Abram's not that kind of person. Then it finishes up there in verse 9 saying that he moves down to the south or starts heading down to the south of the Negev. So that this map is just merely kind of the left part of the map is showing the land of Canaan where he went down there. It's blown up a little bit to the far left of the picture, showing you Shechem, and then moving south from there, pitching his tent between Bethel and Ai, and then going south of there, heading down to the Negev. Here, kind of blows up in this map, Bethel and Ai a little bit, kind of showing, you know, his way of moving down from Shechem to that area, and just kind of showing you a little bit more of that path. This map here kind of shows you as moving south, just the Negev is this southern area of that region. And Wayne, I don't know if you remember this picture or if it's from Trent or Rebecca. I don't have it. I just include it because it was here. I don't know since it was after this slide if this was a picture of modern day where the Negev would be or whatever. I didn't really have any notes on it, but I didn't delete it. But who knows? Didn't mean to put you on the spot, but I just decided not to delete that. We don't have much time to finish up. We'll just make a few more comments on this, and we may review just a little bit more as we continue the story Sunday morning as we're moving further along. End of chapter 12, so if you want to read any ahead, finish up reading some in Genesis chapter 12 and also read chapters 13 and 14. That will be the story, Lord willing, that we'll get to Sunday morning. But Hebrews 11, 8 through 10, by faith, is, you know, one of the greatest people of faith that we think about. We're probably thinking about Abraham almost every time when we're talking about a great character that showed faith. But by faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to the place which he would receive as an inheritance. And he went out, not knowing where he was going. By faith, he dwelt in the land of promise, as in a foreign country, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise, for he waited for the city which has foundations, whose builder and maker is God. Abram is proposed to us in the scriptures as a pattern of faith, patience, and loving obedience. When he received the call of God, he spent no time in useless reasonings about the call, his family, the circumstances, how hard it would be, all of that stuff. He was called and he goes. That's our lesson. God wanted him to do something and he goes. He doesn't argue. So, question for us, do we hesitate or make excuses to obey God's commands today? Abram knew that earth could afford no permanent residence for an immortal mind, and he looked for that heavenly building of which God is the architect and owner. In a word, he lost sight of the earth so that he might keep heaven in his view. So he was seeing the bigger picture. Sometimes that's another good lesson. We get lost in the daily things that are going on, and we ought to have our sights on heaven. What about our faith? Are we focused on heaven or on earth? So that's a thought question as we move forward. I'll do a couple more of these review slides as we start and kick off class Sunday morning, then we'll move right into finishing chapter 12, 13, and 14. We'll just end there for tonight. Thank you for your attention.